This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. My guests this morning are Sharon London of the National Wildlife Federation and Michelle Weinstein, Field Conservation Associate with the Woodland Park Zoo and head of the Otter Spotter Program. Sharon and Michelle are here to tell us about supporting wildlife in the city and the 2018 Wildlife in the City Week, which will take place in the Seattle area April 15th through the 21st. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks.
What is the purpose of the upcoming Wildlife in the City Week?
Well, the purpose of the Wildlife in the City Week is really to inform Seattle and Puget Sound residents about what kind of difference we can make here in the Seattle region with our rampant population growth. We see cranes and our skyline is changing dramatically, and we know it's different for us, but it's also different for wildlife, and we want to give citizens and all the residents of our region some ways and tangible things they can do to make a difference.
Who or what groups are hosting Wildlife in the City Week?
So the National Wildlife Federation is spearheading this effort, and as a federation, our goal is really to bring as many people together as possible around this issue, where our key partner is Seattle Parks and Recreation, and we have over 25 different nonprofit groups who care about wildlife conservation who have joined together towards this effort.
Would you give us a sense of the wildlife that lives in the city of Seattle?
Michelle, why don't you talk about that?
Well, I can talk about river otters in particular, although there are a lot of different species that we have right here in our urban area. But I'm part of a study on river otters in the lower Duwamish River, and that's the only river that comes through Seattle, the Green Duwamish River. And there's actually tremendous diversity of wildlife there. So there are osprey and all kinds of bird life, herons, there are river otters and raccoons and muskrat, seals and sea lions. Five species of salmon come up the river, and those salmon are critical for supporting orcas, even though we don't actually have orcas coming up the river. But there is really a tremendous amount of wildlife diversity in our urban areas and in the Puget Sound region.
And yet, even in the region, additionally, there's brown bears. People have seen bobcats more on the east side of the city. But yeah, there's all sorts of animals that people come across all the time.
Coyotes, cougars, lots of good stuff.
Keep your cats in at night.
Would you highlight the events that will take place during Wildlife in the City Week?
Sure. With over 25 groups participating, there's all sorts of different events, things like learning about marine mammals at Discovery Park. You can go down there and get trained by an expert on what to do, like not letting your dog off leash. We have a Gardening for Wildlife talk at Swanson's Nursery. You could kayak Lake Union with Puget Sound Keepers. They do this every single Wednesday. People are out there kayaking, cleaning up the sound. There's story time with Seattle Audubon. There's a film festival with Washington Water Trust. There's the Duwamish Alive Restoration events. And then our culminating event is a wildlife festival at Discovery Park on April 21st from 1 to 5 p.m.
Which of the events are most appropriate for children?
I would think the Seattle Audubon one does a story time called Fledgling and Friends, which would be really great. And really the wildlife festival is going to be fantastic. It's kids' activities with over 20 different groups participating. So there's whatever your child might be interested, there's something there that they might enjoy doing.
Would you go into more detail about the films being shown at the Wild and Scenic Film Festival?
Well, the Washington Water Trust is putting that on, and it's really, I think, their focus is on salmon and movies that are going to make a difference for water conservation, because water is important both for people and wildlife, and it's really important that we all conserve it so that we have clean water to drink and animals have a place to live, particularly for river otters.
How can listeners find out more about the festival?
They could go to seattlewildlifeweek.org, and there's a list of all the different events that are taking place, and we are really excited to see you, and all of our different nonprofit groups would love to have people come out.
One of the activities during Wildlife in the City Week is a session you mentioned on how to garden for wildlife. Would you like to tell us about the National Wildlife Federation's Garden for Wildlife program?
Definitely. Anybody can certify their backyard, their school, their business, their place of worship, and if you certify your yard, it really helps create corridors for wildlife. So birds, bumblebees, bats, they all are pollinators, and we need this to survive, you know, for our food. And to certify your garden, all you have to do is go to nwf.org/certify, and there's five elements you'd need in your garden. So you need food, you need water, you need some sort of cover, which your plants would do. a place to raise young, and sustainable yard care practices. And really the key to this is native plants, because if you have native plants, then the bugs come, then the birds come, then the bigger species come. But it's really that cycle of life, and it's a wonderful way that we together can make a difference. And in Seattle alone, over 900 of our residents have already certified their gardens. Washington State is one of the states in the U.S. with the most certified habitats, with over 10,000. So people are already doing this, and if we all join forces together, we can really make a difference and create these corridors that wildlife need to survive, particularly as our city is growing so greatly.
What types of wildlife is your wildlife-friendly garden geared to?
Really pollinators, so birds, butterflies, bumblebees, and you can even put bees into your garden. But really, we want to make sure there's pollinators, which, as I said before, with the native plants, then brings the bigger species. You know, it's that cycle of life. If there's plants, then the, you know, insects and birds and all those different species can survive.
So would you say more about the key elements of a garden that will attract and support wildlife?
Absolutely. So native plants would be your number one choice, and you can get that at any local nursery. Swanses is a sponsor of our festival, but Sky, Molebacks, all the different nurseries have native plants. And there's even our conservation districts have places for that. You need healthy soil, so you don't want to be using lots of pesticides and things that can leach into the water table, bad for people and bad for wildlife as well. And really having that cover and food for your animals. So a lot of the leaves will do that, but also bird feeders can work, those types of things. And then areas where animals can raise their young. So you don't want your neighborhood cat to jump, you know, come in and take away the birds. And there's raccoons in our area, so you really do want to be careful that there's a place for the wildlife to raise their young.
What would be some pollinator-friendly plants, some specific ones?
Gosh, any native plant would really be great. So Oregon grapes, salal, there's little ground covers. You can do ground cover, larger plants or trees, but all of these different native ones. And there's usually whole sections in the garden stores that can help you with that. But if there's specific species you're looking for, I would just go to the garden store and say, hey, I want to learn about this. And actually, on the NWF website, there's a plant finder app, you know, that you can use, and it'll help you choose which plants would be appropriate to attract the species you're interested in.
What has the wildlife-friendly gardening program accomplished so far?
Well, I think really it's bringing people together around wildlife. Numerous cities have certified. There's a whole Mayor's Monarch Pledge where there's entire swaths where monarch butterflies go in, like, the central U.S., where entire cities have banded together. And so we're really ensuring there's corridors for these really important species. And it's been exciting to see people come together and kids at their school see gardens. We even had a teacher say how once they planted their certified wildlife habitat, she had a student who couldn't focus. And suddenly, when there was a hummingbee outside, that student was able to focus. And so gardens can really bring people together and give kids a focus, and adults too, for that matter.
Where are the gardens in Seattle located? Are they concentrated in certain neighborhoods, or are they just all over?
All over. City parks can even be certified. A lot of neighborhood parks, like in Ballard, the Sustainable Ballard Group, Groundswell Northwest has put together a certified habitat. And a lot of people's yards, you might just even see them as you're walking down the street. And if you certify your yard, you can order a sign as well.
So what is the evidence that the program is actually effective in helping to support wildlife?
I think the evidence is that people who plant the gardens are seeing wildlife in their yard. And so you actually get that cause effect of plant something and boom, there's butterflies, there's bees, there's animals. I was at the Flower and Garden Show and numerous people came by who have certified their yard and told me how many more species they've seen since they planted their native plant garden.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Sharon London of the National Wildlife Federation and Michelle Weinstein, Field Conservation Associate with the Woodland Park Zoo. Our topic is supporting wildlife in the city and the 2018 Wildlife in the City Week, which will take place in the Seattle area April 15th through the 21st. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP, 90.3 FM by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. In addition to gardening practices, what steps can we take to support wildlife in the city?
I think one of the number one things we can do is go out and volunteer in our city parks. And then Michelle's program does a really great way. That's a really fun way to support wildlife.
Yeah, we actually, in concert with the research that we're doing in the Lower Duwamish, we also have a statewide program called Otter Spotter. And that is a citizen science initiative. So it turns out, despite how charismatic and how much people love river otters, there's actually very little information about their distribution statewide. And so we launched this community science initiative where we ask anyone who's out in Washington, if they see a wild river otter, to report it to us. And if you search Woodland Park Zoo Otter Spotter online, you'll end up at the page where you can tell us about your river otter sighting, and that allows us to build information about where river otters are distributed and to learn a little bit more about, you know, how they're using our state's resources and habitat and where they are at the moment, which we can then use in the future to understand what's happening with their populations.
So if you look statewide, where have the otters been spotted?
Yeah, so we have gotten our particular data have been primarily from Western Washington with some really high concentrations around the Seattle area and also in the San Juan Islands. And that probably has more to do with more engaged communities there and just the outreach that has been done to those particular communities. But we expect river otters to really be in any of the major waterways across the state, including in eastern Washington. So they're tied to freshwater resources, and they also do very well along marine coastal areas as well. So we are looking for and would very much welcome participation from people all over the state.
So if someone sees an otter, what should they report?
Well, our form has a whole series of questions, but we want to know when and where they are seeing the otters. We're curious about group size, and there's some questions that allow us to get at whether they might be seeing juveniles or pups. And then we're very interested in their behavior, the type of habitat that they see them on, and any other information of interest to the people who are fortunate enough to have that wildlife sighting.
So how can people tell the difference between a river otter and a sea otter?
That's a great question. So probably one of the easiest ways to be able to tell is in Washington is where you see them. We primarily have sea otters way out on the outer coast of Washington. There have been a few confirmed sightings in the Strait of Juan de Fuca and down into the San Juans. But if people are seeing something otter-like in Puget Sound, they are probably seeing a river otter. They're smaller. They're very adept on land. They don't typically lay on their backs the way you imagine a sea otter, just floating on their back like that. They tend to never stop moving. They're always dipping in and out of the water. They're climbing out onto land. They're very agile on land, and that's in a stark contrast to sea otters, which really are meant, they're built for being in marine waters almost all of the time.
Let's talk now more about your research project using river otters as biomonitors of ecological health in the Green Duwamish River. Why study the Green Duwamish River?
So we targeted the Green Duwamish River partly because the lower Duwamish waterway is a Superfund site. So many people might know that this unique river that runs through Seattle and is really the heart of a lot of Seattle industry and has been for 100 years. People don't realize that it ranges from this Superfund site in the bottom 5 miles to all the way up 90 miles through the Green River and a lot of different mosaics of habitat types to very pristine, clean habitat. And so we wanted to be able to look at river otters to see if they reflected this variety in watershed health and to look in particular at the contaminants that were in river otters in this Superfund area.
How is your project set up? What do you measure?
Yeah, so the fun part of our project is that we actually go out and collect river otter poop, which we call scat. So we're out there a lot on the banks of the river looking for river otter scat. And we collect that. We actually don't disturb the river otters at all. We don't capture them. We pretty much don't even interact with them. And that, as a wildlife biologist, it's not as fun to not get to see them, but it's much more comforting to know that we're not impacting what we're studying directly because we basically just show up where they tend to poop. And we're able to collect those scat. It's what's called a non-invasive method. So we can have zero impact, probably, on river otters while getting a tremendous amount of information from their scat. And so we take those scat back to the lab and we can measure all kinds of things. What we're focusing on primarily is measuring those pollutants that historically have been going into the river for a long time.
Would you go into more detail about the pollutants?
Yeah, so we're looking primarily at PCBs, and their production has been outlawed here since the 70s, but for decades they were produced and also dumped into our environment before we really realized what an impact they were having on human and environmental health. And so we are looking at how that historical pollution is still impacting our environment and wildlife today, because PCBs, part of the reason they're such a huge problem is because they're very persistent. They don't degrade, and so they're still in our environment even though we've stopped dumping them there decades ago.
What are your results so far with the PCBs? What have you found?
So first of all, river otters appear to be really great biomonitors. So kind of like a thermometer, but they're not measuring temperature. They're measuring the health of our environment. So up high in the watershed, many miles up the Green River, we see very low levels of PCBs. Down in the Duwamish, in the Superfund area, we see very high levels of PCBs. So in terms of river otters being able to tell us about environmental health and what's going on in terms of pollutants in the food web, they're a really great indicator of that. We did find high levels. We are also generally seeing that they are very resilient. So the exciting flip side of the bad news that our wildlife is contaminated with all these things we put in the environment, we're also seeing resilience in that system, which is very inspiring. So the river otters are there. These other wildlife species that we were talking about earlier, that diversity, and the restoration efforts that organizations have invested in along the Duwamish, they really are illustrating that while we can have negative impacts, we can also have positive impacts, and we can support bringing these wildlife back and making sure that they're on a more healthy trajectory than we've set them on in the past.
How do you plan to follow up your results? What additional studies are planned?
At the moment, we're very proud that we have this work, and probably one of its most important values is as a baseline. So we now have information for the levels of contaminants in river otters in the Duwamish. The Duwamish has done some early restoration, but they are about to launch on the formal restoration and cleanup process via the Superfund process. And that's estimated to take about 17 years. And so we're very hopeful that these can be extremely valuable data to look at how those restoration efforts essentially flow through the entire food web, to then be able to look in the future at river otters as a top predator in the system. Do we see that these restoration efforts in terms of soil and plants and sediment, do they end up translating over time into cleaner fish, cleaner crabs, all of the other critters in the system that river otters take advantage of for their prey?
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Sharon London of the National Wildlife Federation and Michelle Weinstein, Field Conservation Associate with the Woodland Park Zoo. Our topic is supporting wildlife in the city and the 2018 Wildlife in the City Week, which will take place in the Seattle area April 15th through the 21st. So are there additional ways that we can help support wildlife in addition to the ones you've mentioned already?
I think doing habitat restoration in local parks is a really important way. There's numerous groups around that lead these hold habitat restoration events, and I think really helping not only do work in your backyard or at your school or business, but really working in our community parks is a huge way to support wildlife.
And I would echo that and say that the research that we've done showing the levels of contaminants in wildlife really illustrate how our individual choices can impact the quality of our terrestrial habitats, the quality of our waterways. And so There are many ways. National Wildlife Federation has these programs that allow us to make individual choices that improve the quality of the environment. What we do in our backyard has a huge impact on what the Duwamish River looks like. And so National Wildlife Federation, Duwamish Alive is a fantastic organization that supports restoration. The counties and cities around the state have resources for green practices at home. Their Puget Sound Partnership, there are lots of resources for how we can actually make choices about how we garden, how we wash our car, what types of products we use, our consumer power for supporting products that are green and that really nourish our environment.
Well, you've been alluding to this, but what do you consider the key challenges for wildlife in the city?
Well, I think habitat fragmentation is really a big one, particularly in the Seattle region, as we have these huge high-rises and developments going in all of these suburban and formerly rural areas. Wildlife is really losing the places it needs to live. So, you know, bears are now coming into cities. We have a supporter who lives across the way from I-5, across from the Boeing airport, and she's seen wildlife, you know, just coming along the corridor of I-5 because there's nowhere else for it to go. We've really just taken out the habitat that wildlife needs. So that's why we really, at least in urban areas, want to give people something they can do to create new habitat. And then as people develop, we really want to encourage them to not just develop the whole area, but leave some green space, leave corridors for wildlife, and really try to find ways for connectivity, because connectivity is really key for so many species.
And I would add, from an aquatic perspective, stormwater runoff really is the biggest issue that Puget Sound has, and that is because of what's in that stormwater. It's all of the things that we are adding to that water that's running into our streams and our rivers and then ultimately into Puget Sound. So again, tying back into really getting people to understand how their personal practices around what they're putting in water has a tremendous impact. So looking into ways to reduce that impact while still being the people that we need to be in the space that we're in.
The other thing I would add would be corridors like wildlife crossings. So there's one underneath I-90 right now that our partners with Conservation Northwest have put in. I have a colleague in LA who's creating a huge corridor. They're trying to build an overpass over the 405 in LA to help pumas and cougars, you know, cross over. So it's really finding ways that wildlife can cross, you know, the urban areas and all these streets. We have 2 million miles of highway in the U.S. I mean, that's a lot of places that wildlife can get killed. So we want to really find ways to help wildlife just cross the street.
I think the overarching theme, both terrestrially and aquatically, is we need to be creative about finding ways to coexist with wildlife, because for the foreseeable future, we're not going anywhere, and we really don't want a world that doesn't have wildlife in it. There are direct benefits for people in terms of health and economy, but there are also just a lot of value beyond those tangible ones. I think it would be a sad world to live in if we didn't share it with wildlife.
Yeah, our studies are showing that in the next few decades, up to a third of the species that we know in the U.S. are going to go extinct. I mean, that's a lot of species that would be really sad to see go away.
We want to try to prevent that.
Yes, absolutely.
What should people keep in mind if they encounter wildlife in the city?
I think number one is don't try to help it right off. Don't try to pick it up or take it to a vet. Really figure out who the authorities are that can help you. So like for marine mammals, there's a whole stranding network of people through NOAA, through the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association, that will come and help you figure out what to do. But it's not your job to do it, but call someone who knows the right thing to do.
I would agree. And I would say that I think thinking again back to the fact that we may want to and may try to help an individual animal, but really where we can be much more helpful is by thinking about how we broadly impact the environment, because those choices have effects on population levels for those species. And that's really what we have to get at if we want to protect wildlife.
And there's so many neat efforts like the Otter Spotter program, where citizens or community members can go online. There's eBird, where you can write down what birds you see. But these citizen science efforts are really great as ways that people can help make a difference and let scientists know where wildlife are occurring, because they really, the range is moving, particularly with climate change and global warming. Many species are moving north.
Say more about the citizen science initiatives that are available in the Seattle area.
Well, in addition to Michelle's great otter spotter program, Seattle Audubon has all sorts of programs. Like, there's a Christmas bird count. You can go online to eBird with the Cornell University Bird Lab.
There are a lot of opportunities. Woodland Park Zoo has an amphibian monitoring program. The aquarium has citizen science, also sometimes called community science programs. Beach Watchers exists in many coastal counties.
Forest Service has some programs about monarch butterflies, maybe not in Seattle because they don't go to this area, but definitely in Oregon and other areas.
Yeah, there's a wide variety of programs and some online searches depending on what people are interested in. But there are definitely opportunities out there and lots of ways to get engaged with questions where organizations need person power to be able to collect those data. So very valuable resource.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I guess my message would be that we can all make a difference. We can all come together for wildlife. There's ways to make a difference.
I agree with that. I would say that, again, our individual choices and our consumer power can go a long way towards providing support for the environment. And I would also say, especially in the context of the Wildlife in the City Week, that while everyone is important, I think engaging youth is really critical so that we can build that environmental ethic in them and have it just be part of their habits to make choices that support the environment and wildlife. And so there are a lot of engagement opportunities coming up with National Wildlife Federation and this week for kids to learn more about the environment and wildlife and how they can engage and help their families engage in practices that support the incredible diversity that we really are fortunate to have here and hopefully maintain it.
And I would just add, I had written this down because I love this quote, the Margaret Mead one, but never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. And I think for wildlife and for our environment, we really do need to come together in that way.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
You were just listening to Sharon London of the National Wildlife Federation and Michelle Weinstein, Fields Conservation Associate with the Woodland Park Zoo. The 2018 Wildlife in the City Week takes place in the Seattle area, April 15th through the 21st. For more information, check on the web at seattlewildlifeweek.org. Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to the podcast section of KEXP's website at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and at kexp.org.